Here at the All In Podcast, we love talking about sports. That's pretty much our main topic. And sure. In sports, you need to be reliable. Well, what's more reliable than Tavon's Lawn Care, LLC? It's a Black-owned family business in York, PA. Tavon's Lawn Care, or TLC for short, since they provide each job with tender love and care, has been in business for over 10 years. Founded by owner Tavon Parker, TLC aims to provide employment for underprivileged youth while providing great service at a reasonable rate. You can visit Tavon's Lawn Care LLC.com or Tavon's Lawn Care on Facebook and Instagram to view their portfolio and request your cost-free quote now. So if you need any kind of lawn care or landscaping job, visit Tavon's Lawn Care for your landscaping needs. What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Eli Cooper, and I'm joined, as always, by my other co-host, Mike Badzik. How's it going, brother?
It's going good. We are live. Love going live and new features that we're adding to the show. So very excited, and we have a lot to talk about right now.
Yeah, man. You know, exciting week. NFL finally kicked off. So we got that to look forward to. And silently, the Nuggets forced a game 7 against the Clippers.
Yep.
I, at the time, had no idea this game was going on, which may be maybe a bit of a scheduling thing that the NBA might want to consider. I feel like it was difficult for them to compete with especially the 1 o'clock games, right?
Yeah, that would be the main slate. And also, like you, like, did not even know this game was going on until about the fourth quarter when I was on Twitter and saw something about it. And I'm like, oh, crap, they're playing. Like, what's going on? It's the fourth quarter. The Nuggets are winning. Luckily, I did get to watch NBA TV. Had a replay on this morning, so I got to see it. But, yeah, interesting choice of time for that game on a Sunday. You know, it's first week of NFL. You would think, you know, if I were them, I would have tried to line it up in the almost 6 o'clock slot, 5:30 slot.
Right.
Tried to have, like, the fourth quarter be between the 4 o'clock and the 8 o'clock game.
Right.
But, yeah, they didn't do that. And yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, that's what I said. I figured they would at least, if anything, like, compete with the 4 o'clock games. Like,
yeah.
Because those are the least amount of games. Plus, you know, most of those are the West Coast teams playing, right? There's a lot of times those teams that play at 4 o'clock. Not all of them, but it's largely West Coast teams playing at that time. And you're in the East now, out in Orlando. So, like, it would benefit you kind of, you know, just interest-wise, I would feel you'd get more of your audience able to watch during, like, 4 to 6, somewhere in that range. If your game starts somewhere in that range and then kind of ends before – you know, Sunday night football or maybe first quarter of Sunday night football, something like that. But nonetheless, the Clippers came back. They trailed throughout this game again and came back and ended up forcing a game 7. And Jokic was a monster in this one. Yes. Are the Clippers in danger of actually losing the series?
I think they have to be, right? It's game 7, so... they've lost 3 times already. I think we kind of have to say that they could definitely lose game 7. If they, you know, and we talk about the guys who, you know, in playoff time, fourth quarter, you know, who do you want on your team to go get a bucket, as we say a lot. Well, like, I think Kawhi is probably towards the top of our list just from his ability to get to his spots and create in the last 5 minutes in an ISO situation. He, you know, when we talk about guys who remind us of Kobe or remind us of MJ, we always bring up Kawhi because of his ability to get to his spots in the fourth quarter of these playoff games.
Right.
And he was really good, but, like, the supporting cast is not playing great at all right now. And we talk about the Clippers for their depth a lot of the year. I think people were giving them the edge over the Lakers because of their depth. Well, like, besides Paul George and Kawhi, and Paul George played really well, you know, the guys did not show up. Harrell has been terrible all playoffs, but really in this game, I think he was over a minus 20 just in this game, and he's been over minus 60 for the playoffs altogether. So he's been really bad. Lou Will actually was shooting the ball well, but he just didn't have that same aggressiveness. I don't know if it was because of the way he was staggered with Paul George or Kawhi. He just didn't feel the need to assert himself. But right. I think they could have used that, at least giving those guys a break on offense where it's not running through them.
Right.
But, you know, credit to the Nuggets. The Nuggets have battled. They never lose confidence. They knock down shots. You know, they were 12 of 25 from three this game. That's kind of the story with them. If they hit over 40% of their threes, like, they have a good chance of winning. And Jokic was fantastic. I think he is kind of, you know, tattooing his name on best center in the league. If there was any debate before, I think he's kind of running away with that right now just from this play. I don't think we really thought the Nuggets had a real chance here before the series. We looked at the series against Utah. We said, okay, Utah took them to seven. You know, is Jamal Murray going to be consistent enough? And we almost forgot about Jokic, right? Like, we were just pretty much exclusively talking about Jamal Murray, and Jokic kind of has asserted himself as the you know, third finisher in MVP voting, probably on my ballot, or fourth, and last year as well. He's kind of showing why he is revered that way.
Yeah, man. I thought, you know, obviously Jokic wasn't great in the first round, and I think it's because he had that tough matchup against Gobert. And, like, coming into this, when we previewed the series, I said this might be a better series for him, you know, because they would probably have to play through him because the Clippers are a more perimeter, you know, oriented team defensively. Their interior defense isn't that good. But, like, he's scoring from all over the place. He's, you know, it's not just, you know, down low post work. It's pick and pops. It's pick and pops. He shot fakes, puts it on the floor. I mean, he hit some ridiculous shots last night, you know, throughout that game, and really kind of carried the comeback. And then they won that game by 18. I think they ended up winning it by. They were down by 12, you know, midway through the third. And they just kind of took that game completely over.
Yep.
And I think you have to ask serious questions about Paul George and Kawhi, you know, if they lose this series to a clearly inferior Nuggets team. And especially since, like, we're going to look back at this and be like perimeter players really lit them up. And that's supposed to be their thing. You got Pat Bev, Paul George, Kawhi. These guys are supposed to be elite perimeter defenders. And, like, last round, Luka lit you up. Yeah. And Jamal Murray has been, for the most part of this series, has been really good, surprisingly. So, you know, that, to me, it's just – it's questionable, man. And the Clippers also went from having a chance to, like, getting some rest, you know, before seeing the Lakers in the conference finals to now.
That's huge.
Even if they win Sunday, like, they're going to have, what, Monday off and probably – I think they're scheduled to play Wednesday, probably, is when the conference finals would start. So only 2 days rest when the Lakers have been resting for like four or five now.
Right. And the fact that we're even saying, and I agree with you at this point, is like, well, they kind of ruined their rest situation with the Lakers. We're like, that also kind of shows that they are a much better team. Like, we all expect them to still win game seven, even though they've let us down so many times. Now we're still like, they're the better team. They're probably going to win game seven, but like you mentioned Kawhi and Paul George and what we're gonna have to say about them, but like what about what we have to say about Doc Rivers?
Yeah,
like, at what point are we gonna, you know, and listen, Doc is a very respected guy, and I think that just on respect alone, he, you know, he deserves a head coaching job. He certainly is good enough to do that, and he certainly has won the respect of a lot of players, and people do want to play for him, and that, you know, that matters for something. But you know, he was fired in Orlando. He probably almost got fired in Boston before they got KG and Ray Allen. He had that big three. They won one championship, okay? Like, I know we sometimes pretend that they had, like, this dynasty. They won one championship.
Yeah.
And Doc Rivers was the coach. Then he goes to the Lob City Clippers. That was a disaster. They end up having to blow that up. And now we're looking at this team, and we're saying Kawhi and Paul George, and they're loaded coming off the team they had last year. Which was good enough to make the playoffs and actually give the Warriors a couple of problems in the first round. And then they add Kawhi and Paul George. Obviously, they gave up a couple of pieces, but a lot of the nucleus is still there. And now, you know, now if he loses to the Lakers, that's one thing. I don't think we're going to look at him then and say he's not the guy.
Right.
The Lakers maybe are just better. But if he loses to the Nuggets, like, I think we have to look at him and say, like, is he the guy for this job? And he also has been talking up the Clippers have been talking up Sam Cassell as a potential next head coach of the Rockets.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if the Clippers as an organization want to talk too loud right now about Sam Cassell. Maybe they want to be keeping him for them if Doc Rivers thing doesn't work out. But it's been a huge disappointment for the Clippers. I think even, you know, they're going to, you know, we can do predictions. I don't know if you want to do predictions, but I probably would take the Clippers in game seven. I think they're going to win. But yeah, this has to be disappointing.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. Well, let's do it. Let's do predictions for game seven. Who you got?
I think I have to take the Clippers. I mean,
yeah,
you know, even if we line this up and we say, you know, the Nuggets have played just as well, the Nuggets are going to do their thing. And if they shoot threes and if Michael Porter Jr. gives them really anything, they're going to have a chance. But I just think, like, when it's game seven, it tightens up so much. And we saw this with Utah-Denver. We saw this with Toronto-Boston. Like, it tightens up so much more than it already is.
Yeah,
you know, the guys are so fatigued by the fourth quarter, and I think we're really going to see it maybe catch up with Denver. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if the Clippers kind of pull away at the end, just because like they're going to be so exhausted. But now I will say this: now there is no quit in Denver, and they're going to fight. So maybe they can do something here. But I just think the Clippers are better, and they have the advantage because of, you know, the game seven and everything surrounding that.
Yeah, I mean, my brain is saying the Clippers are going to win this, right? For all those reasons you just mentioned. But something in my gut is like, yo, they seem like they're ready to actually blow this. Like,
take them.
Like, they're going to really blow this. But I'm going to take the Clippers as well. I'm going to make a decision with my head, because I think that at the end of the day, Kawhi Leonard has been on the absolute biggest stage, and most of these Nuggets guys haven't. So, you know, I think that matters at the end of the day. And even though most of these Clippers guys have it, well, Paul George has been in some tough conference finals games and things like that. But I think at the end of the day, yeah, it didn't work out. But like, he's been in those moments at least, you know what I mean? More than these young Nuggets players have been. So I do think at the bare minimum, like, Kawhi's going to have to flex, you know, some muscle here towards that. It's going to be close and it's going to be tough. And he's just going to have to kind of show that he's the best player on the floor and take over late. And I think that's exactly what happens. And the Nuggets season comes to an end, unfortunately, because, you know, I think there's something to be said for how well they've played so far.
And game seven, typically, you know, we're going to talk about football here next. But, you know, in football, I always look, I'm like, okay, head coach, quarterback, like, what's the combination there? Like, I'll typically lean that way. Game sevens, I'll typically lean, okay, who's the best player on the court first? And then secondary, who's the head coaches? If we're looking at best player, I still think it's Kawhi. And listen, I still think Doc is the better, you know, better coach than Mike Malone probably. You know, I could argue what Mike Malone has done has been more impressive this season than Doc, considering the guys on the team and where they at in the season. But I think I probably would say, you know, who's the best player, Kawhi, who's the better head coach? Probably, as far as we know right now, Doc Rivers.
Yeah. All right. So that wraps up our Game 7 discussion for Nuggets and Clippers, which when's that game? Tomorrow, right?
Yes.
Tomorrow, yep. Yeah. So that's going to be a good one. Yeah, Tuesday, tomorrow, that's going to be a good one to tune into. So now, before we switch and get into our NFL topics, for those of you tuning in here to the live stream, we are offering a 30-day free trial to Amazon for Amazon Prime. The link of the code, or the link to use to redeem that 30-day free trial, is going to be in the comment section at first. So those of you tuned into the live, that's where you'll be able to find it. It's actually up there now. If you are watching the replay, link will be in the description of this video. So if you're watching this, obviously after we've gone live on our YouTube channel, you can still find the link in the description of this video. Use that and redeem that to get 30 days free at Amazon Prime. And after you use it, tell everybody you know, hey, go to this video, share this video with your friends, let them know they can get 30 days of free Amazon Prime right here on the All In Network YouTube channel on our latest video. So let's move on, as the big topic of the weekend was week one of the NFL.
Yep.
And we had some exciting games. If you're an Eagles fan, you had some disappointing games. certainly an interesting weekend. But first, let's kick it off. Let's talk about some week one overreactions. you know, that you may have seen on Twitter, social media, or that you just know people are going to overreact to. So, Mike, give me your first week one overreaction.
The first one probably is going to be the Ravens, that, you know, undefeated this season. Like, they didn't miss a beat. And I actually, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree that the Ravens are going to be really good. You know, I was one who was saying, you know, I think that they're probably not as good as last year. Maybe take a step back in the regular season wins. We'll see if that translates to Lamar Jackson's first playoff win. But, like, man, did they look good yesterday.
Yeah,
they looked unbelievable. I don't know if it says more about them or more about Cleveland still being Cleveland. That's a team that we were high on as well. So maybe the other side overreaction is that Cleveland is going to be terrible this year. I think that probably it's going to be somewhere in the middle of both of those where, you know, Baltimore is probably the way they looked yesterday. They don't look like they're going to miss a beat. They don't look like, you know, and maybe it's just Cleveland's coaching staff, because I think a lot of this is when you talk about stopping Lamar Jackson, it's going to be on these coaching staffs to watch film from last year and try to figure something out. You know, obviously that's really hard to do with the guy who won the MVP and is one of the most dynamic players we've ever seen, really.
Right.
So that's going to be tough to do, and it's on the coaching staff. So maybe it says about Cleveland's staff to where maybe, you know, maybe this isn't the hire for that type of job. Now, I do think Cleveland is going to be better than what they showed yesterday as well. You know, Baker, oh, man, that was disappointing. If you're a guy who's rooting for Baker, and I'm not really one of them being a Steeler fan, but I did think he was going to be better than that. And I thought Odell was going to be better than that. Odell, interestingly, 22 yards. So 2-2 for Odell. Real shitty performance from him. And you know, you could see it too, because he would, you know, there was multiple times in that game. So I'm in this Cleveland market, so I was getting that game. Where, you know, as soon as it left Baker's hand and you know, he'd miss OBJ by 4 yards and he's throwing his hands up, like, it looks like it might have started to begin with this dynamic that, you know, has always seemed like it was doomed to implode at some point. That might be happening soon. So those are some overreactions from that game would be my first ones.
Okay. Yeah. So that was, I agree. I think both ways you're going to see some overreactions. Mine was going to be the Browns, because they played, you know, such a good team, and, you know, the way they lost, I think, is kind of what makes you look at them like, God, here go the Browns again, right?
Right.
So it's like, I understand it. I get it. But I'm not going to, you know, I picked them to make the playoffs this year. I'm not going to jump off that after this game, you know, because I think they had a tough matchup. They weren't going to win this game regardless. I think they tried to, you know, like the fake punt. They tried to do some things, you know, a little unorthodox to try to, you know, maybe make up for them flat out being less talented. So, you know, I think as they play, not an easier schedule, but obviously teams that aren't the Ravens, I think they'll fare a little bit better. And I don't think that goes quite as bad. My biggest overreaction that I think, you know, we're going to see is Tom Brady being, and the Tampa Bay offense, right, being overrated, or the hype isn't, you know, the hype shouldn't be there, whatever, you know, all the criticisms that we're going to see of Tom Brady in the Bucs offense. Like, okay, granted, you know, this offense is prone to turnovers, clearly. I don't think, you know, I think we're going to see Tom Brady throw more interceptions this year than he probably ever has. Yeah. I don't think that necessarily means that Tampa Bay won't be good or that their offense won't be good. I think this is really just going to be an adjustment for Tom Brady, and I think it's going to be an adjustment for Bruce Arians. Like, I think after this game, you have to kind of look at it and be like, okay, like, something about my offense needs to change, especially since my quarterback isn't the same. Like, I don't think you can run the kind of offense Bruce Arians runs with Tom Brady. He's holding the ball too long, you know what I mean? And that invites pressure, and he has absolutely no mobility to escape that. Like, even Jameis could move a little bit, right? Tom Brady has no chance. Like, they ran a play with a fake sweep, tight end, middle screen to Gronk, and I'm just like, that takes way too long to develop. Gronk is not that kind of tight end to be catching, you know, middle tight end screens and be running after the catch. And Tom Brady shouldn't have the ball in his hands that long. Like, he's not mobile enough to make those kind of plays and things like that happen. So, you know, I think there needs to be an adjustment. You know, there, as far as Arian's offense and his approach, like, get Tom Brady a more three, at max 5-step drops and get the ball out of his hands quickly. to your playmakers and Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, you know, and Gronk for that matter. So keep it simple. You know, I don't think you need to rely so much on the deep ball now that you actually have, you know, a quarterback who can put together drives for you.
Yeah. And Bruce Arians, I don't know if you saw, he kind of threw Tom under the bus today.
He did.
In his press conference, he said, I don't know what happened. We weren't unprepared for anything. We knew what was coming, which is a kind of a way of saying, you know, Tom should have been better, really, is what we're saying. If we're saying I did my job, we knew what was coming. You know, that's kind of throwing him under the bus. Yeah, but I think you're right. And we talked about this before with his offenses. And guys in their first year of his offenses typically actually lead the league in interceptions. So I don't think we should be too surprised if Brady throws a fair amount of picks, especially at the beginning of the season while he's still learning the offense and still finding what works for him. And Bruce kind of figures him out as well. Like, this isn't – you know, they didn't have any preseason. That's probably – you know, one of the things I think didn't get brought up enough yesterday was the lack of preseason. Like, these guys don't have a chance to work together. Apparently they were thrown together, but that's just so different from an actual game situation. So we'll see how they work out the Kings. I think Ronald Jones looked pretty good, actually. Mike Evans, I think, probably was still hurt. I don't know what's going on. You know, he was questionable all week. I think he didn't have a catch, I think, or maybe one or two at the end, but I don't think he had a catch.
Yeah, he got a touchdown at the end.
He had a catch at the end, but then all game was nothing. You know, it was really garbage time when he caught the touchdown. But so I think if you're the Bucs, you're looking at it and you say, I think, you know, still need to figure each other out. Now, the Saints secondary especially is actually really good, and their line is really good. And the Bucs offensive line, you know, that was one of the biggest question marks. They used that first round pick high on a tackle, but we'll see if he, you know, and you know, his first career game, he draws Cameron Jordan. Like, that's kind of tough.
Yeah. Right.
So maybe he gets some excuses there. Maybe he doesn't catch so much slack because it is, you know, one of the best 4-3, probably the best 4-3 defensive end in the league in his first pro matchup. So yeah, I think the Bucs are going to be probably better than what they showed yesterday. But you know, I think if you are a Bucs fan, you're looking at Brady and saying, are we sure he's that much better than Jameis Winston?
Yeah, especially at this phase of his career.
Yeah. And for what Arians wants to do.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So we'll see how that pans out. Yeah. My next biggest overreaction is going to come from the heart, if we're being honest. Those of you that know, I'm a Philly sports fan. In every facet of the way. Mm-hmm. And the Eagles lost to the Redskins 27-17, obviously on week one. So not a great start for my Eagles this week. And Carson Wentz looked bad. Yes. You know, no Miles Sanders, no Lane Johnson in this game. And so here's my overreaction. Carson Wentz is playing for his job, for one. Mm. And two, that the Eagles still – that the Eagles won't win this division. Anyone who thinks otherwise, I think that's an overreaction. Here's why.
Okay.
Lane Johnson is a huge loss for this Eagles team. I mean, you can go back and look at their overall record without him. You can look at Carson Wentz's stats without him. It's a huge, huge difference. Okay. So, you know, I think it's a little unfair to judge them off of this game with no Lane Johnson. And obviously I think Miles Sanders being out hurt them a lot too, because I think they were expecting to, you know, utilize him a lot this season. And him being hurt kind of changes how they run their offense. I think they threw the ball way too much yesterday. There was, you know, I think Boston Scott only had like 8 or 9 carries and Clement had like 6 or 7, something like that. It, you know, there was not enough balance between pass and run, which typically when that happens for the Eagles, you know, they typically lose or don't play well.
Yep.
And especially with Washington's front seven, which is pretty good, especially since they added Chase Young. You know, Lane Johnson, old Jason Peters just moved back to left tackle like right before week one with Dillard getting hurt. So obviously we had offensive line questions. So it's no shock to me that they lost this game, if we're being honest. And it's no shock to me that Carson Wentz played bad. You know, and I get it. You know, they took, you know, Jalen Hurts in the second round, which obviously has people concerned with how the Eagles feel about Carson Wentz. this game is not an indicator for that. Because if Jalen Hurts was in with no Lane Johnson, no Miles Sanders, no Alshon Jeffrey, Deshaun Jackson got banged up throughout this game, he would have looked just as bad, probably 10 times worse. So let's not overreact. The Eagles will be fine. Carson Wentz will be fine. Lane Johnson's going to get healthy. Miles Sanders is going to get healthy. We'll get Alshon back in the middle of the season, and the offense will look perfectly fine and get back on track.
Yeah, so I was ready to talk about this. I didn't know if you were going to have this an overreaction or surprise.
Overreaction.
Yeah, so overreaction. And I was on the Philly, Eagles as well to win the division. Yeah. I still am on them to win the division, not because I think they're like great, but I think Dallas is pretty mediocre. And so I watched that game yesterday. So my wife is a Philly fan. She loves the Eagles. And so she's like, let's watch the Eagles. So I put on the Eagles, and watching that game and watching the Eagles on offense, my wife's very emotional watching these games. It sounded like she was like going through child labor or something, watching the offensive line just, constantly like, oh my God, stop. Like, no, like, because Washington just has guys running free through the offensive line, constantly the entire game. It seemed like every drive. And I think Lane Johnson probably helps.
Yeah.
But a lot of it, Wentz has got to do stuff at the line of scrimmage and see that stuff. And we can say what we want, but like, he still has to be better. He still had to be better than he was yesterday. And I think he will be better. I think he's, I agree. He's not playing for his job, I don't think. I don't think he should be playing for his job. Eagles, they do this every year. They have at least one or two of these games every year. I should have saw it coming. I didn't. I had them in a teaser this weekend. So I needed them to just win. They did not. Thank you, Philly. So I share in your pain, Eli. disappointing. Disappointing for the Eagles, but I guess it isn't very surprising, though.
Yeah. So, I kind of – before kickoff is really when I saw – when they rolled out Lane Johnson is kind of when I saw it. And I was like, I don't know that I would have picked them to lose, but I certainly kind of was like, okay, well, this is going to be a lot tougher. And I kind of fell for it as well because I started Boston Scott in, like, both of my Yahoo leagues for fantasy, and I started him in a couple of my ESPN leagues. And that backfired. So, I bought the Boston Scott Kool-Aid in this one, and it backfired. But the Eagles will be fine. Yep. Any more overreactions you have for this week?
Quickly, Trubisky is not back. Trubisky is not good. Let's just stop. Okay, I know that they came back and beat the Lions. I think it says more about the Lions and how they handled it in the fourth quarter. And they should have won. Swift just
struggled with the bag.
Yeah, I don't know. That was weird. It was like he was trying to not get hit or turn up field and run, but he was in the end zone. That's one of the few times where he literally dropped the game. But Trubisky did play well. Now, I don't know if Detroit's a good defense to compare it to, or if he's, he likes the dome better. But, I'm going to say he still sucks. And anything other than that's an overreaction.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt so bad for Swift when he dropped that ball. And normally I'd be like, oh, he's a bum. But like, Swift is incredibly talented. Like, he's the future of that Lions backfield, even though they have him in a three-man committee right now. Understandably, they have three good backs. Yeah. But, he gets a shot in his NFL debut to make a game-winning touchdown catch and blows it. And not only – it's not even like it was like a tie ball game, where that drop, you still have a chance to win it in overtime or something like that. Like, he dropped that lost them. Not only did it not win them the game, it lost them the game with that drop. And it was one of the worst drops I've ever seen. So, definitely feel bad for him, man. But hopefully he can rebound in week two. He did get the score a touchdown, though, so I'm sure that was nice.
And Adrian Peterson. How about Adrian Peterson looked really good for Detroit, too.
Yes, he did. He did. And it's like everywhere. It doesn't matter where he goes, man, what scheme he's in. Adrian Peterson's just going to run hard. And that's just, his mantra, man. It's cool to see that.
Yep. One of the goats.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about some week one surprises. What about this week caught you off guard and really has, like, you thinking about this player, this team going forward?
Yeah. So I think the biggest one for me was Colts Jags.
Yeah.
And maybe it shouldn't have been. Maybe I, you know, last year I did dabble in some Minshew mania. So maybe I shouldn't be so surprised, but I really thought the Jags were going to have one of the worst records in the league this year.
Yeah.
I actually had a bad bet placed in that they would finish with the worst record in the league this year. But you know what? Maybe I shouldn't be that surprised because Philip Rivers.
Yeah.
You know, we had talked about how he looked bad last year and, you know, is he washed? And we thought maybe, you know, at least I did anyway. You know, I picked him as a playoff team, not the division winner, but a playoff team. I kind of looked at it and said, I don't think he's that washed. I think he's okay. And if you put him in a better situation like Indianapolis instead of San Diego, not San Diego, LA, you know, he could be good enough to get you to the playoffs. But he was washed. He turns out he's washed. And, you know, maybe he'll improve and maybe it'll get better. But like, it just looked like a struggle to throw the ball down the field for him.
Yeah,
on everyone. Drew Brees kind of looks similar. We could talk about that. But you know, Rivers, it was just not good. The Jags just kind of hung around. It felt like they should have lost early in the game, but they hung around. And Minshew was fantastic, and he let them down, and they scored, and they actually won the game. So biggest one for me was Jags over Colts, probably.
Yeah, that was shocking to me. Especially, you know, I think most people would have thought the Jags were kind of tanking it for Trevor Lawrence this year.
Yeah.
But Minshew, man, he doesn't put up like these ridiculous numbers or anything like that. But he finds a way to win games, man. Yeah. He did it last year and it looks like he's going to do it again this year. So we'll see how that goes, you know, for him and the Jags going into the season. They got to figure out their running back situation long term.
I think they still suck. I think they're probably, you know, 5-11 at best.
Right.
I definitely was surprised this week.
Instead of 1-15.
Right.
So for me, I got to say it was the play of Josh Allen. Mm. And, you know, maybe this is – I have him in a fantasy league, and maybe I'm thinking too much into this. But
all comes back to the fantasy teams with you. It always comes back.
It always does. Now, you know, granted, the Jets are awful, and obviously that means something here. But he looked really good, man, and this Bills offense looked really good. Yeah. And I just wonder, you know, if the addition of, you know, Stephon Diggs is really going to open up this offense. He looked pretty good, 8 catches, 86 yards. He wasn't, you know, incredible, but he's another threat for them, man. And, you know, John Brown picked up from where he left off last year, 6 catches, 70 yards and a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And then Cole Beasley was his typical, you know, self out of the slot. He's got a good, you know, set of weapons around him. He's got two good running backs in Devin Singletary and Zach Moss. I'd like to see them get more touches. Allen led them in carries with 14. And even scored once. But I think in the future, we'll see more of Zach Moss and Devin Singletary throughout these games. I think this offense could be pretty good. You know, if Josh Allen doesn't revert back to, you know, garbage Josh Allen that we've seen before. So I think this was a step in the right direction, especially for his confidence. We'll see if he can, you know, maybe not keep this level of play up, but, you know, still be, you know, a step above what he was last year. And I think this division, you know, I think the Patriots are going to have more to say about this division than we might have initially thought, as Cam Newton looked really good, which I'm sure we'll get to. But yeah, you know, if the Bills want to win this division, Josh Allen is going to have to play really well, and he's off to a good start. I thought, you know, that was pretty intriguing.
Yes, it definitely was. I'm still not buying it. I'm still out on the, is Josh Allen a average to above average quarterback, but I don't think he needs to be. And he definitely doesn't need to be against the Jets. And he was better than that, though, so give him credit. Not sure if it's going to be a sustainable thing. You know, maybe. We'll see. Good for him. So my second one, I guess, let's talk about Cam Newton then. Let's do that. Let's talk about the Pats. You know, not a big surprise for me that he looked good and they won. If you listen to our bold predictions episode, I made a bold prediction of Cam winning MVP. And that's a bold prediction, not the actual, you know, probably I wouldn't pick him if you gave me one choice, but a bold prediction as in like this, I could see this happening. And he played up to this week. I think Patriots fans quickly forgot about Tom Brady when they saw him and the way he moves. Now they're playing him like he is on a one-year deal, which he is. I mean, they're not afraid to have him run the ball. And, you know, if I had him on a one-year deal, I would definitely utilize that as much as possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, he looked really good. Miami, you know, Fitzmagic didn't have any magic this week. Probably he's probably done with that at this stage in his career, but you know, he still wondered about it. You know, the Patriots didn't blow them away by any means. They covered the spread, so that's what matters for me anyway. Yeah. So you know, I was impressed by the Patriots and Cam Newton. I think the Patriots are going to be right there. Like, we kind of were, you know, everyone is talking about the Patriots and do they take a step back? I don't think they're going to take a step back. And you mentioned tanking with the Jags. Like, you know, there was a time in the offseason when we're talking about, are the Patriots going to tank? And of course that was dumb, right? Of course they're not going to tank. Of course Belichick's not going to tank. Yeah. I don't think any team in football really tanks just because of, you know, the turnover battle is, you know, if it gets fluky one way or another, you know, that's the difference between going 6-10 and 10-6. So I think you have a lot of teams, you know what I mean? Like, that's why we see bad teams in the playoffs sometimes and good teams get left out. You know, things are sometimes fluky where tanking is just not a good strategy because you never know what's going to happen. And especially with the extended playoffs this year, going to 7 teams, I don't think teams are going to be tanking. So that was dumb of us to even consider that with the Patriots. And they showed it this weekend. I think they're going to be there all year.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting to see how they used Cam Newton. I was surprised. They ran him 15 times. You know, obviously in goal line situations, you expect that. But throughout the game, he had, the most carries throughout and really only threw the ball 19 times. But we did talk about this, you know, when we – actually, it was in our last episode of how Josh McDaniels just, you know, he knows how to put a system around his quarterback. The Patriots didn't force Cam Newton to play, you know, Tom Brady-type football. They played him like he's Cam Newton. And I think they feel a little more comfortable running him so much because he essentially had a year off, right?
Right.
You know, to kind of get healthy and just rest and not take any hits. And he looked rejuvenated out there, man. He looked healthy. He looked really healthy. You know, so maybe they don't run him 15 times a game, but 10 times, you know, and certainly inside the 10, we'll see him, you know, a lot. And if you're a Sony Michel fantasy owner, maybe that's not great news. But if you drafted Cam Newton and took a late flyer on him, it looks like a great pick right now. Granted, it's the Dolphins. And I think he's going to have to be a little more aggressive throwing the ball in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't really know who's going to stretch the field for them. Like, you know, who's going to be their deep ball guy. It doesn't look like they really have that.
No.
But, you know, we'll see how that ends up working out for them. But Cam is certainly off to a good start for the Pats. Okay.
So question then. So if you are Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, you know, what record do you have during this season? At what point do you guys go to Cam Newton's people and say, what do you think about a little 3-4 year deal? At what point, like, do you have to be 6-2? Do you have to be 7-1? Do you have to be, you know, is there no point where you approach that? If you know, what do you think?
I think 6-2 it to happen midseason is fair. I think at that point, Belichick might have to put on a Cam Newton fit in a post-game press conference and give him that extension for it to happen midseason. 6-2 is certainly fair because you're probably sitting top the division or at least tied with the Bills, depending on – I don't have their schedules in front of me, but – you know, just you're up there with the Bills fighting for the division. If Cam Newton, and then at the end of the season, if he wins you this division, you got to bring him back for 2 to 3 years, I think, unless you have a legitimate shot at, you know, a young up and coming quarterback or something like that. Or maybe you give him another 1 year deal. You draft a quarterback and redshirt him, you know, behind Cam Newton for one more year or something like that. Cause you know, let's be honest, I don't think Stidham is their long-term option.
No, he's not. You know, it's freaking sickening. Being a Steeler fan, it's just sickening at the Patriots. Like, Brady's finally gone. And you freaking idiots let them get Cam Newton.
Oh, man. And especially when you have an older quarterback who's injury-prone. And Cam was out there long enough to the point where I think he would have taken a backup deal, you know, if he got it.
It's just unbelievable. Like, every year they get the top, you know, whoever is waived from their team, they always get Cam Newton.
Yeah.
It's like something's going on with all the other GMs.
Right.
Where they're like, I'll let the Patriots get them. Yeah. They won't do anything. Like, meanwhile, they win six, you know. So.
All right. So let's talk a little Sunday night football.
Yeah.
Rams and Cowboys played last night. Rams came out with the win 20-17. And a controversial call late in that game. Gallup seemed to have had a big catch down the field, which would have put them in probably field goal range or even possibly, you know, gave them a shot to try to score before the end of that game.
Yep.
And call for offensive pass interference. Good call, bad call. What do you think?
Well, Lena, let me just say, Jalen Ramsey was apparently watching the Eastern Conference semifinals between Boston and Toronto and learned a thing or two from Marcus Smart and Kyle Lowry.
Yes,
he definitely sold it. He definitely sold it. I don't know if that means it wasn't a foul or a penalty.
Right.
It probably is borderline. You know, there was some hand tugging. You know, I think as a football fan, you probably, unless you are a Rams fan, I think you probably want to see the refs let that go. You probably want to see them say, you know, let him play. And, you know, they're fighting it out. It's not egregious. He didn't fully extend. It wasn't anything like that. So I probably would err on the side of I wish they wouldn't have called it.
Yeah.
They called it. It is what it is. Those calls happen. Pass interference calls, when they're controversial, they benefit the Rams. It happens every – I don't know. Like, I saw Nick Wright said that this morning. He's like, every time there's a pass interference call, controversy, it benefits – the Rams. So for me, it's probably a no call, but you know, they called it. It is what it is.
I agree. I mean, they're both fighting for position, essentially, you know, down the field. And for me, there's no extension there.
Yeah,
like
no extension.
There's no extension of the arm and a clear push off for you to call that. Really, at any point in the game, I don't know that I would have agreed with a ref making that call, and especially then.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and honestly, if Jalen Ramsey doesn't give you a little bit of this, there's no way he throws that flag because it's not a clear and obvious push off. So, you know, kudos to a veteran cornerback like Jalen Ramsey, who is the highest paid cornerback in the NFL now.
Yes.
You know, and maybe should be the highest paid actor in Hollywood after that one. But other than that,
yeah,
are you concerned about the Cowboys? You know, in this game after this?
No more concerned than I was before. I think they have major issues. You know, I've been preaching about this offensive line of theirs with Lyle Collins and Travis Frederick gone, and Aaron Donald tore them apart. And, you know, to be fair, he tears apart just about every offensive line.
Right.
But the way that he was going through them was just, you know, obvious and very explicit, the way he was just tearing them apart. And really the whole entire Rams defensive line was. And we saw it affected the offense, you know.
Yeah.
You know. Obviously, I think you're expecting more out of Dak, or Dak wants to be this $40 million, 45 whatever plus million dollar quarterback. He has to be better than that. He played like a $30 million quarterback yesterday, but I think the Rams are good too. You know, for me, I was high on the Rams coming into this year. I think they're going to be one of the best teams in the NFC. You know, at this point, they might be. I think if you just looked at it, I don't know if you could make a case for them not being the best team, or at least one of the two or three best teams in the NFC. They were okay last year, actually. They came on at the end of the year. Like, I think they have good chemistry. Now, the Cowboys, I think they're not very good. Like, they're mediocre. They're always mediocre. Like, I don't know why people were coming into this year after what we saw last year and saying, you know, they're going to be 12-4 or 13-3, like, best record in the NFC. Like, why? Because they got Mike McCarthy? Like, I don't know if we remember Mike McCarthy in Green Bay. Like, he was the poster of average in Green Bay. Like, I don't know if there was, you know, he won the Super Bowl, and there was a year or two of he's a really good coach. And then for about 5 or 6 years, it was he's a very average coach, right? Yeah. You know, and we watched this game last night. If they would have never shown the coach on the sidelines, and we wouldn't have got to see either McCarthy or, you know, Jason Garrett clapping over there, we probably wouldn't have even known who was coaching. I mean, that's how similar they played. Like, you know, there was no – even the offense, it didn't look that much different than the Clappers' offense than McCarthy's did. So, you know, I'm down on the Cowboys. I think they're an 8-8, 9-7 team, which I think is probably about where the Eagles are going to end up. So, you know, it's for me, it's going to be a close race in the NFC East, but I just don't think the Cowboys are that good.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's kind of what, you know, I talked about, you know, coming into this with the, you know, the two shows we did prior, you know, Dak, I'm not a believer in Dak. Like, Zeke looked good yesterday. Yeah. I think he ran the ball really well. And Amari Cooper looked really good. Yes. You know, and clearly he's Dak's, you know, go-to guy. I thought CeeDee Lamb, the young rookie, had a strong debut. But it's just like when you need Dak the most, he doesn't seem to be, you know, a guy who can come through for you. And now, granted, the biggest throw of the night that he would have made got taken back. So maybe we're having a different conversation. But just overall, the offense, unless it's like going through Zeke, you know, and he's absolutely dominating, the Cowboys offense, you know, doesn't put up the points that you'd expect it to. Yeah. With all the talent that is there. And this is a guy who wants to be one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. You know, 17 points ain't going to cut it with Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, Ezekiel Elliott. You know, he lost his tight end, Blake Jarwin, and probably lost him for the rest of the season with that injury. So that certainly hurts. But, like, with the weapons you have, you know, there's no reason you shouldn't be a top five quarterback in the league. And he's just not. Nope. And I thought their defense didn't look good. Obviously, they lost some key guys, you know, on the defensive end. And then Van Der Esch got hurt. So I know that didn't help. But, you know, I thought the Rams moved the ball pretty easily against them as well on the defensive side. So on neither side of the ball did they look like they were the better team. And maybe that's the Rams. Maybe the Rams are that good, you know, or, you know, this is maybe just typical Cowboys football.
No, I think it's the Cowboys. And we said this is like, because there's all these predictions, right? And then after week one, we normally look at it and say, like, why were we even thinking that? Like, why did we think that this was going to be different than what we know? Like, there's some predictions that just go against common sense, and we don't actually see it until we see them play. And I think this is one of them. The Cowboys are still mediocre.
Yeah. So, you know, interesting to see how that turned out. So let's cap off tonight's show. Let's talk about the Monday night football game coming up. There's two of them, actually.
Yep.
Your guys are touching the field tonight. Steelers playing against the Giants. I think you'd expect them to win tonight, right?
Yes, I do expect the Steelers to win tonight. They're 6-point favorites. I expect them to cover as well. You know, traditionally, we are very, very good on Monday night football. For whatever reason, under Mike Tomlin, they have been fantastic on Monday Night Football. I think that Ben has a nice little coming back party tonight also. I'm expecting a lot. I've been reading a lot of stories. Maybe I'm just buying into the hype, similar to the way you were reading into the Eagles. But, you know, I do expect a lot from Ben and Juju and the entire offense. And that defense is really where, you know, they're going to win games. And we'll see if Daniel Jones takes a leap. Tonight might be a good indicator against a very solid secondary and defensive line of the Steelers. We'll see if he maybe takes that leap like some people were expecting. I think like you were expecting, really, with fantasy anyway.
Yeah.
You know, Saquon, obviously, is one of the best backs in the league. You know, this is a team that has weapons. We'll see how the Steelers' defense matches up. But I just think at the end, you know, the Steelers are just too good. So I got the Steelers to win by at least a touchdown tonight at the Giants.
Agreed. I'm team the Steelers as well. I think Daniel Jones is going to have a good season. Like, he's certainly going to take a step forward, in my opinion. Tonight is not going to be the night where we see that.
Yeah.
The Steelers' defense is elite. It carried the Steelers' horrible offense last year without Big Ben. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, going to matter playing against a young Daniel Jones. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how the Steelers defense tries to contain Saquon, not only on the ground, but also through the air as well. So, you know, I got the Steelers. I do think they win by a touchdown. But my thing is just, you know, what I'm really interested to see, and I think what we finally get to figure out is if Juju is a number one wide receiver, right?
Yep.
I don't think last year was a fair assessment of that. You know, he played one game against the Patriots defense, who was playing out of its mind, especially at that point, you know, early in the season. And then Ben gets hurt, and the guys, you know, throwing to him couldn't give him the ball, period. Yeah. So I think, like, this is kind of, you know, the make or break season for Juju. If Big Ben stays healthy, you know, if we'll find out if he's a number one guy. And it starts with tonight's game. So that's going to be an interesting storyline to follow.
Yep. And my fantasy team needs him tonight desperately.
Yeah, mine too. I would need a miracle for him to. I'd need Saquon to be awful and Juju to be incredible for me to win in our dynasty league today. So we'll see how that goes. And then, so Titans Broncos finishing up the night with the late game on Monday night.
Yeah.
Not the most exciting game to watch, I don't think, especially with no Von Miller
on the Broncos
defense. Yeah. But who are you taking in this one?
Yeah, I think Von Miller injury probably sets it over the edge for the Titans for me.
Yeah.
You know, how they contain Derrick Henry, I do not know. Now, I think this is kind of an interesting matchup because Denver's a team that I think some people are high on. I think they're going to have a better year. We'll see about Drew Lock. That's a big question mark. Something we haven't really got to talk about yet is Drew Lock and what he's going to look like this year. Melvin Gordon with Denver now. So they've got pieces. Sutton, I think, is supposed to be limited tonight maybe.
I did not check the injury report.
I didn't see it yet either, but I thought that's what I heard. He's going to be limited. So we'll see about Denver. You know, they are a team that could make some noise, but I just think Henry's going to be tough to contain. And actually, Tennessee's secondary is one of the best in the league. So we'll see how Drew Lock fares against them. Now, Denver's a very tough place to play for anybody. So I would not be surprised if Denver – I think this is a close one. But I would go with Tennessee tonight.
Yeah, I'm also going to take Tennessee tonight. You know, I don't see how they handle, you know, Derrick Henry. I am interested to see, you know, if Drew Lock is legit or not. Mm-hmm. If Cortland Sutton's a number one receiver, how the Broncos backfield split works out, you know, who kind of has the edge in that backfield is going to be interesting to see there out of Gil Gordon and Phillip Lindsay. I'm also excited for the young rookie Jerry Jeudy. He was one of my favorite receivers coming into this draft. Even though a couple of guys went ahead of him, he's incredibly talented, as those other guys are as well. And those other guys had good debuts, like Ruggs, you know, had a solid debut. CeeDee Lamb looked good, you know. So we'll see how
Jalen Reagor.
Jalen Reagor was solid. Yeah, Jalen Reagor was solid.
Yeah, 55-yard catch, right?
Yeah, yep. So he had a big play. So, you know, we'll see if Jerry Jeudy keeps the streak going for the rookie receivers. Mm-hmm. And then on the Titans side, I think the most interesting question mark for them is, like, was last year's Ryan Tannehill – sustainable? Is that going to carry over from season to season, you know? And maybe a run heavy offense is exactly the kind of, you know, quarterback he is, you know, to manage, you know what I mean? Like, just kind of play through Derrick Henry and make the throws that you need to, or make the plays that you need to, I should say, because he also did it with his legs. Maybe that's the kind of quarterback that he more is, and the Titans are, you know, that change of scenery was big for him. You know, so we'll see if he's as good or anywhere near as good as he was last year. For a long stretch, that's going to be the biggest question mark for them. And then, you know, AJ Brown for the Titans at the receiver spot.
Jadeveon Clowney too. Well, it'll be interesting to see how much he plays tonight. And if he has any impact. But the Tannehill one is huge. Obviously, I don't know if there's any way he could play as well as he did last year. But can he?
Yeah.
You know, be somewhere closer to his normal self, maybe somewhere between his normal self and last year. And is that good enough to make the playoffs again?
Yeah. All right. So there you have it. We've got Steelers and Titans winning tonight, which that game should be coming on actually just about now. So we're going to sign off, let you guys get a start on the pregames on Steelers and Giants for Monday Night Football. Again, we appreciate you guys tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. Again, make sure you hit that subscribe button if you're tuning in so you get notifications. We will also be going live again on Wednesday, and we are trying to get a special guest to come on with us. So still waiting to hear back, fingers crossed. But we will be live again on Wednesday. I think we said 6 on Wednesday.
Yep.
We'll make sure we tweet out the specific time. Again, if you're watching this video, make sure you check out the comment section. You can find the link to a free trial for Amazon Prime, free for 30 days. It'll also be in the description of this video if you're watching the replay back. And make sure you go tune into the other videos on our channel, All in Politics. Just released a video over the weekend and a new episode. So you can catch them on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned as a new episode of Rain and Bliss should be coming soon. So stay tuned for that either here on our YouTube channel, or if you're tuning in on the audio version, you can also catch them on any of the audio platforms streaming podcasts.
Yep.
So thank you guys for tuning in to another episode, and we will see you guys on Wednesday.
Thanks for listening, guys. I'm sorry, you know, man.